Okay, so I'd like to turn our attention to Shvi Shel Pesach and Kriyas Yom Tov. For the next 36 hours, we'll celebrate Kriyas Yom Tov, and Rosh Hashanah tonight and tomorrow, we'll talk about different facets of Kriyas Yom Tov. But in keeping with this morning, the morning schedule, let's talk a little bit about the tefillah which took place at the Yom Tov. We spoke about the tefillah after Makas Svardea, the tefillah of after Arbeb in Arenu Viskanina Nelech, the tefillah of Makas Farad, the tefillah of Am Yisrael and Mitzrayim. At the Yom Tov, we see a overt tefillah, probably the most classic form of tefillah. Am Yisrael is cornered, the raging sea on one end, the advancing Egyptian divisions on the other end. Ufara of Kriyav, source number one. Vini Mitzrayim of Seach Rehem. Vayyir Ba'al, there was great terror. Vayitzakim B'nei Yisrael. And finally, Am Yisrael davens in a much more classic fashion. Tzaka is one of the lashonos of tefillah. Three interesting aspects to highlight. Number one, Rashi comments on this pasuk, source number two, Tafsu Umanus Avosam, that in davening, they were adopting their ancestors' practices. And Rashi lists the tefillah of Avraham, the tefillah of Yitzchak, and the tefillah of Yaakov, the tefillah, the Gemara says in Brachos, Kineged Avos Tiknum. Namely, this davening was not just some personal need to cry out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a moment of crisis, but they were restoring lost identities. You remember, a slave undergoes cramped imaginative sweep, limited historical horizons. I mentioned on the first day of Yom Tov that part of the Makos were to restore their heritage, who they were before they were slaves. They were shepherds. They were people that HaKadosh Baruch Hu protected from Paro and Parshas Lech Lecha. So, at this moment of tefillah, it wasn't just a personal experience, we have a need, we're in crisis, we fear for our lives, let's daven. There was some internal connecting, some internal sense that we belong to the Avos, though they may have lived hundreds of years earlier. We are now part of that lineage, something which may not have been as prominent in its writing. You see that sense emerging during the Oz Yashir, we'll talk about this over Yom Tov, Zeki Levi Andeu, they had this very personal relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in a sense of fatherhood and ancestry, that he was not just our God, but he was the same God of Har Moriah, of Yacheda, the same HaKadosh Baruch Hu of Yaakov, of Yosef. So the sense of elongated historical verticality, they're not just living in the moment, but they belong to a long lineage, Tafsu Midas Avosam. Rashi's commenting on something that was an inner awareness, not just, oh, by the way, they happened to daven like Avram daven. They were aware of their ancestry in a way that they hadn't been as aware during the slavery, and even in the Karban Pesach. You don't have that same sense of Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov because they hadn't offered it. Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov didn't offer korbanos. They built mizbechos. They may have offered korbanos. It's not clear, but they built mizbechos. This is a moment that they can tap in to their heritage. The second aspect is that, and this is a bit of a provocative, even controversial issue, is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu desired to hear their voice. As I mentioned a few days ago, that davening in the beginning of Parsha Shemos wasn't the classic form of davening. They were moaning, they were sad. Hashem heard their suffering, but it wasn't this dialogue or communication. But at this point, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, as it were, enough. I have to hear their voice. This process has taken 7 days. There's a budding relationship between us. I have to hear their voice. And this is enshrined, this desire of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to hear our voice finally after we've been silent. Remember, there's no tefillah on display throughout any of the Makos. There's no tefillah on display the night of Purim, the night of Pesach, the night of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Now, 7 days later, Hashem says, I really need to hear your voice so this relationship can be advanced and can be augmented. This is captured by Shlomo HaMelech in the Pesukim in Shir HaShirim, source number four. Yonasi Bechag Ve'Haselah, my dove, is right around in little nooks and crannies of the boulders near the sea. The Sesar Madrigal, the steps that normally form along the seawall. And I want to hear that dove's voice. Harinius Marayach, let me see you. Hashminius Kolech, especially I want to hear you. Ki Kolech Arei Marech Nabeh. Of course, we are compared to a Yonah. That is the animal, the bird in Shir Shirin that is an allegory or metaphor for the Jewish people. So this male in Shir HaShirim wants to hear the Yonah's voice, and this Yonah is scampering around on the rocks near the cliffs. This is extremely evocative of Yamsuf, the Yonah Si B'chag V'asel, the Sesar Madriga, Kadosh Baruch Hu desired to hear our voice. And in fact, as the Medrash highlights, HaKadosh Baruch Hu orchestrated Kriyas Yamsuf so that we should finally die. And this is, of course, a very, very provocative and very audacious statement. Why did he create Yamsuf? HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have taken us to a different moon. HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have split the sea without the Egyptians advancing. The Egyptians had been humbled. Obviously, the Egyptian pursuit of the Jewish people is fomented, or at least allowed by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Why this whole melodrama in Parshas B'Shalach? So at least the Medrash, and this is not an isolated Medrash. This is a Medrash that appears in almost every Medrash based on the Pasuk in Shir HaShirim. Hashem says, I'm going to choreograph this entire event just so you should doubt it, because I need to hear your voice and I need that relationship to be reinforced. And it's comparable to a daughter whose father, the king, she's a princess, she doesn't really speak to him that much, and they don't have as much of a communication. So the king starts to introduce some enemies and some threat to her, just so that she should reach out to her father. So Kach, source number 5, line number 4. Let's read this together because it's important. After the bowl, line number 5. When the Jews are in Egypt, the Egyptians are enslaving them, and they daven, according to the pasuk we mentioned on Sunday, but it's still not the davening Hashem desires. Line number 6 from the bottom, line number 5 from the bottom, the second bold face. Hashem wanted to hear their voice in a more classic form of davening. And they didn't have the ability to daven. Davening takes imagination, davening takes emunah, davening takes a relationship. They don't have that yet. Masa, line number 4 from the bottom, source 5, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Chizek libo shel paro v'radaf achareihem. HaKadosh Baruch Hu engineered Paro's heart to create this moment of tefillah, and then the Medrash concludes with the pasuk of Al Osa Shah Yonasi B'chag V'Asela B'Seisar Madriga. This is, of course, reminiscent of a very famous chazal in Sefer Bereishis. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is misaveh l'tfilasim shel tzaddikim. Hashem wants tefillos, and therefore he rendered our grandparents akaros. Rivka was an akara so that she should daven. Vayerti Yitzchak v'nochach ishto. Sarah doesn't really daven. We don't see any indication of her davening. We certainly feel that Rachel is davening, some of the ways that she responds to the naming. This is a very interesting moral and theological question. Could HaKadosh Baruch Hu subject human beings to suffering or to hardships just so they should daven? From an initial standpoint, it seems troubling. Why should I receive treatment that I may not deserve just because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants me to daven? On the other hand, if the highest experience is to be close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the worst punishment is to be distant from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then whatever I have to endure to elicit that tefillah, to contribute to that relationship, is worthwhile. If the end game is that I feel closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu through my tefillah. That's an important question. We don't have enough time to fully explicate it here. But what's interesting about this notion in general, and particularly at the Yom Tov, is that it renders tefillah a bilateral experience. I mentioned earlier in Yom Tov paganism, pagan gods don't really need your tefillahs, don't really need your bribes. They've got power. They're more powerful than human beings. If you bribe them, if you manipulate them, they'll share their power. But they have no interest in the relationship. Tefillah is different. Just as much as we want to daven, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants that relationship. Hashem wants that relationship. He wants us to daven, not because he wants to feel good about himself or that he can deliver providence and hashgacha, but he wants that relationship. And as far as he's suffering, he helps him because that relationship is still limited. That relationship is still diminished. So Hashem says, Harinius Marai, Hashminius Kolei. So whenever a person davens, on the other side of the door, the famous door of Shir HaShirim called the Divrei, is HaKadosh Baruch Hu knocking. Remember, in Shir HaShirim, Hashem is knocking at the door. We're not knocking at the door because he wants the relationship as badly as we do. So that's the second aspect of the tefillah of the Yom Tov. Number one, the reminiscence of Sefer Bereishis. Number two, that Hashem desires the tefillah and orchestrates Yom Tov to enable the tefillah. Yes?
Is there a difference between tefillah and shiloh? Because you've got a Medrash that says, Ma'asi Yodai told you by Yom Ha'atem Ha'im Shiloh?
That's for the malachim, not necessarily for Am Yisrael, but in theory you could create that difference. But in general, for example, Vayetu Yitzchak Menocha Chishto Chazal Darshan, one person is digging from this end, the other is digging from the other end. It sounds like the bilateralism of Tzila supersedes Shiras. It's extended to all forms of Tzila. The final aspect is, if you take a look at those two psukim in the beginning, when Am Yisrael is davening, the very next pasuk, they're also rebelling. Pasuk Yudal, the very next pasuk, Vayamur Moshe. It's very odd. You daven and then you rebel. You have faith and then you're skeptical. It's a very famous Ramban, and I'll talk about this hopefully a little bit over Yaltif, towards the bottom of the page, says really there were different groups. Some groups had faith and were davening. Some groups were skeptical and they were rebelling and they were questioning Moshe's authority. Source number 8. It doesn't seem logical that those people who are davening to Hashem, line number 2, Yivatu b'Yeshua, all of a sudden they're going to deny and discard HaKadosh Baruch Hu's response. Abel Hanacha, on the end of line 2, Shenifarish kihayu hakitas. There are different groups, there are different segments. Some of the population was davening. Some of the population was rebelling and rejecting. Which is interesting on two fronts. It's very easy to daven when everyone in the room is davening. What about when you're the only person in the room davening and you have to withstand either skepticism or weird looks or people that deny the impact of your tefillah? Think about the last time you davened in an airport, the last time you davened in a public space where inevitably people may have been mocking you or making comments or rolling their eyes or looking at you in certain, I'm sure there are people who are inspired by it, but other people may. So the ability to daven in the presence of people who are not all in, who are not engaged, who don't necessarily support and create the enthusiasm and the momentum, is on display at the Yamsuf. And second of all, of course, these aren't just other people who are mocking you, whose sarcasm you defy. These are people you're actually davening for, because we're not going to cross the Yamsuf unless the entire people crosses. So you've got people who are denying the impact of tefillah, but you actually have to daven on their behalf. And think about all the times that we're called to daven on behalf of so many Jews in Israel, who may not appreciate davening, or may not know how to daven. Our davening is meant to be a davening for entire peoples. So we have to daven for Jews who can't daven. So the Yamsuf, they're facing mockery, but they're also forced to daven beyond themselves, to daven for a group of people who don't know how to daven or aren't yet. That will change. We'll talk about this tonight. That will change in a few psukim, but at least at this moment, there seems to be divisions amongst the people. Yes?
Just quickly, what's interesting is that Hashem says, much like Eli, you know, there's too much davening, so it's right. A matter of
Moshe Rabbeinu then wants to daven again. He says, why are you davening? They've already davened. Right. But this is really the first moment of frontal davening. And these are three little ingredients. Number one, tafsu umanas avosam. They're responding and returning to their grandparents' lineage, ancestors. Number two, harinias marayach hashminias kolech. Hashem orchestrates this entire drama just to evoke their voice. And then finally, the Ramban, kitos, kitos, some more. Let's see how that changes tonight. Talk soon.